Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to Angel on Top. Just a few announcements before we get into the trial and introduce our very special guest.
Patrons can expect the second half of our Angel on Pot episode for Buffy's Angel on February 19th. If you've not yet joined our Patreon family, you can do so at patreon.com/angelontopcast. Angel on Pot episodes are available to patrons at any level, and joining will also gain you access to our private Facebook community, our live watches, and many other little sweet treats.
Patrons at the $10 level and above also receive a discount in our store. Check out angelontop.merchnow.com for our 3 t-shirts, a big demon energy pin, and our brand new fresh brewed mug. Welcome back to Angel on Top, a podcast where we watch and discuss every episode of Angel one by one, spoiler free, and in tandem with Buffering the Vampire Slayer. I'm Laura Zach.
And I'm Brittany Ashley. And this week we're watching The Trial. Stick around until the end for an original poem written by us through the perspective of Angle.
The Trial was written by Doug Petrie and Tim Minear and directed by Bruce Seth Green. It aired on November 28th, 2000.
This is the one where, in an attempt to save Darla's life, Angel must undergo 3 separate challenges that no one has ever survived.
It's also the one where Angel hits peak codependency.
Joined today
by our boss.
Ha! Yes, that's me, CEO Owen Youngs.
By which we mean Jenny Owen Youngs.
Hello.
Of Buffering the Vampire Slayer fame, as well as a delight, a talented musician.
Wow.
A natural leader.
Wow.
Someone who has trouble making eye contact during compliments.
Yes. But I am. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Great. A natural leader. A Leo rising. You know.
Checks out. Welcome back.
Well, yeah. Thanks for having me. To have your take on Darla, which we've yet to hear about this season on Angel.
Hot. She's hot.
Yeah.
Well, let's wrap. Thanks for joining us on Angel on Top.
Very nuanced take from Jenny.
I have a question. I've been noticing in recent episodes you guys have been saying Angle in the intro. And while I'm
Just Brittany has.
Fully.
I like a soft G.
That's a hard G.
Angle?
G is a hard G. J is a soft G.
That makes no sense.
Laura's right.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's a tiebreaker vote.
I mean, isn't soft and hard kind of subjective?
So it's not on a theme. It's not something from like an Angel on Pot episode that I have missed. It is.
It is something that I'll do. I think that
you just like fucking with G's.
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I just wanted a brief moment of clarity.
No, and now I know the difference between soft and hard. Well,
this episode is one that I'm delighted that we have you on because it feels like a film. It feels like there's a lot to unpack.
There's so much. So many things happen. We learn a lot. It's really intense. I've watched this series like at least twice before and I completely forgot what happens at the end of this episode. So I was delighted to be surprised all over again. Where the fuck has Drusilla been this whole time? I'm trying to remember.
Was she with the chaos demon?
She, right. Her and Spike split up. He went back to Sunnydale and she's been just doing her thing, living her life.
Yeah.
Her
and if anyone could get in contact with her, it's Wolfram and Hart, apparently. Yeah.
Well, you know what's interesting is that at the beginning of the series, they have no idea who Angel is. They're just
right.
Like, who's this new guy in town fucking our shit up? And they have like no context for his like history or significance. But that by now, they're just like, Darla, check. Drusilla, check. Will they eventually wrangle Spike and drag him down from Sunnydale? Possibly.
Only we can find out. Yeah, it does seem like they have a researcher dedicated specifically to the life of Angelus and Angel to kind of fuck with him.
Yeah, I think maybe they've recently replaced their research team. I don't think the research team from the beginning of season one was doing their best work.
Yeah, they probably like executed that person.
Let us hope.
Well, but also we've seen very quickly Kate do her research. So we do see a precedent of once someone's introduced to the world of Angel, it's like, who are your exes? Where do you come from? Like, what makes you tick? Right. Like, he's got a lot of people very interested in his backstory.
Imagine being only defined by your past, you know?
Laura.
Yes, Jenny.
I'm wondering about you and Kate.
Oh. Oh, my. Also, just to inform the dear listeners, I'm like sitting in this like cozy armchair and Jenny's across from me making eye contact. Sure. And I do feel like this is a little bit therapeutic feeling.
Wow. Well, happy to help. I've been listening to you guys both express your respective opinions on Kate.
Can't wait to hear yours.
Well, she's very irritating lately.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
But that's fair.
I think to me, the way that I'm reading your specific
take.
Mm-hmm. It feels like she got in early with you. Like when she first shows up, she's a lot more likable. Mm. And she also has this sort of like, okay, so you know how there's Nordstrom and Nordstrom Rack?
Yes.
Okay.
Where
so like,
are we going?
But I'm Kate into it. Is like the Nordstrom Rack version of Dana Scully.
Oh.
Visually and also like the weird, hard rejection of things that are in front of her.
She's the Aeropostale, you know, and Dana Scully was the Abercrombie and Fitch. If this was in 2004.
I'm thinking it's a greater distance than Nordstrom Rack. I'm thinking it's like Bloomingdale's to Marshall's.
I was trying to be respectful to Kate, but I think
I also don't want to be disrespectful to Marshall's and to finding a deal, because I'm, you know, really like finding fashion in a thrifty way, so no judgment to Marshall's.
Or it's like a 4-star like seafood restaurant in Long John Silver's.
Okay. That might be a little bit too far of a
distance to travel.
A lot of bad stuff happened to Dana Scully. It does feel a little bit like Kate has transferred her own pain and loss and grief onto just making Angel the symbol of like everything that's wrong in her life.
It's not like Dana Scully like took it out on Fox Mulder when like a lake monster ate Queequeg.
Right. Certainly not. Deep dive there.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And for Queequeg as well. One imagines. Cool. Well, I just wanted to like touch on this really quick because we haven't all chatted for a little while. Mm-hmm. And like, I get where you're coming from. Kate has so much potential. That's what's like the most frustrating. Yes. She's like really stubborn in this very particular way.
And I think I'm a little bit upset with the writers because I feel like they could tap into that complexity more.
Right. And make her more sympathetic.
Yeah, in a way that's like, I think it would be amazing if as an audience we could be more conflicted of like truly understanding where she's coming from and being a little bit upset about the way she's not fully on board with Angel. Like, they've just made her turn a corner that feels a little bit disappointing.
She actually kind of like ultimately just sort of like is coming off as like a sort of garden variety bigot at this point. There's like so much information in front of her that like makes like the whole situation more complex and nuanced, but she is just like
only saying the worst.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also sometimes not even the worst, but like made up shit.
Yeah. So we all agree. I'm glad.
Yeah. I mean, in ways we do. But she's not in this particular episode, but we start in a way that Cordelia and Wesley have. I feel like this has been the way the last like 4 episodes have started.
Yes.
Of Cordelia and Wesley being concerned about Angel and like talking to each other behind the boss's back.
And being like, are you going to talk to him? I already talked to him. We had tea. You should talk to him. Their concern for him has just kind of been like the constant.
I guess they have somebody more assertive on the team now, but he's already busy doing other stuff for Angel.
Yeah, so. And he also doesn't, I feel like he doesn't, Gunn doesn't really want to take on that emotional labor in the same way that Cordelia and Wesley do. I think he has much more of like a work-life balance.
Yeah, he seems to have the best boundaries on the team. but this time, Angel is changing his tactic, and he's decided to make Cordelia and Wesley believe that everything's A-okay, and the way you know he's A-okay is that he's just doing laundry. He's like, Darla who? I don't know. I've decided, you know what? Like, release. Like, I don't, this is not for me. I'm going to let this go. And then immediately Gunn comes in and is like, I found Darla. And he's like, all right, let's go. He's just lying to them about.
Yeah, it's like when your friend says that they're over their ex. I'm like, oh my God, what's her face again? And then they call and they're like, baby, I missed you.
Nah.
It's just completely changing the tune as soon as an opportunity arises where you can put yourself back into that cycle.
I just wanted to say that I noticed Wesley's jacket in this scene, and I don't know if you did, but it's made of like, it sort of has like olive green twill sleeves, but then it has this like Pendleton like wool plaid looking like panels on the front and the back. And at first it really, I'm sorry that I'm telling you about this, but at first it really like caught me off guard because it doesn't look like something Wesley would wear, which like immediately my response was like negative. But then as I stopped looking at the man and started assessing the garment on its own, I really liked it. Also, he looks wrong in a white t-shirt, and that is,
yeah,
maybe Wesley needs to do laundry.
Yeah, maybe this is like
bottom of the barrel, totally. Salvation Army bag at the back of the closet.
Yeah.
This is the kind of insightful commentary that you
signed up for.
Have called upon me for. Yes. Yes.
Were you picturing a Jenny in that jacket?
Yeah, I feel like a Jenny could wear that jacket and that would rock. If anybody has that jacket from like eBay, you can send it to me. That would be fine.
That is a call to action for someone. So Gunn has found Darla, and she is staying in Skid Row, which is downtown. She has a makeupless face, and she is putting on lipstick, which I took to believe she was perhaps waiting on a visitor, and she was kind of jumping back into her old profession before she was turned.
Do what you know. It's the oldest profession. She's the oldest woman, maybe?
She is the oldest woman.
I think, yeah, she must, yeah.
Am I only older women now?
I mean, she's very well preserved.
True. She is like a pickled vegetable.
Well, like a hot pickled vegetable.
Oh. For sure.
What?
No, Laura? Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Pickle you're... kinks. Lindsay shows up. Beating...
He got bangs.
Yeah.
What
bangs, Lindsay?
That haircut. It's like so close. Like they did the right thing. They gave him a haircut. But why this one?
It's sort of like Cordelia's haircut last episode.
What has been going on? Did Charisma Carpenter like cut her hair super short without telling anybody? And then they were like, to punish you, we're going to give you like the most jank ass extensions.
I think that they got this new hairstylist and makeup artist who was like, I've been working for the stars for years. I'm going to give this whole team a makeover. Hey, you pretty eyes, come here. And then she gave this insane haircut.
Like,
and they kept her on because they're like, I mean, I guess we'll keep Jean on.
She's a legend.
Yeah, she said that she cut Farrah Fawcett's hair 30 years ago. So she's a legend. And she's part of the union, so we can't fire her.
When I was shooting that short film this summer, we hired last minute this catering and crafty person. And she was like, hey, she kind of sounded like that. She's like, hey, can you drop the money for me off at the motel I'm staying at? And I'm like, sure. And I show up to her motel and she answers and she's probably like in her
robe.
No. She had clothes on, but she was in her late 60s, jet black hair, covered in tats. She's like, come in. Don't worry about him. That's just Monty. I look over. There's an old man fully nude in the hotel bed. And he's like,
shit.
Hey.
Oh, my God.
And his name was Monty.
Yeah.
Well, anyway,
full Monty.
Every production has a Gene, is what
I'm
saying.
This kind of reminds me of my upstairs neighbor.
I was
going to
say, what's her
name? Tammy.
Yeah.
I work 7 days a week.
Such an archetype.
It's such an archetype.
And she is a, you know, invisible presence on this angel set. But
we see her.
Clearly there. We see Eugene. And so then Lindsay, when he comes in, like, he's beating Angel to the punch, one beat ahead of him. And this sets up what is going to be kind of this dichotomy throughout the whole episode of two versions of two different men who are in love with Darla showing their love in a different way. I actually kind of oscillated between, like, whose approach resonated for me more, because for a while I was kind of like Team Lindsay, because it felt like Lindsay, in a more immediate way, was wanting to give Darla what she said she wanted and what would allow her to, like, be out of pain. Whereas Angel, even though his expression of love definitely at moments in this episode comes across like a little bit toxic and codependent, and he's not really dealing with his feelings very well. In the end, I ultimately feel, you know, and we'll get to this scene, but very aligned with Angel's form of love, which is a little bit more holistic and not about, like, what's going to take away the pain in the short term, but what's going to be the most loving of Darla and her soul in the long term. And she, by the end, sees that too.
Yeah.
Mm, oof. Ouchie.
Too real? Just kidding. I can't relate to this.
Do you recall if there are any scenes in this episode where Angel and Lindsay are, like, their faces are really close?
Yeah.
When Angel, like, goes into his apartment.
Yeah, and, like,
but is it just when he has him, like, kind of, like, shoved down, not, like, standing across from me? I'm wondering if they had to have Christian Kane stand on a
apple
box at some point. Mm, yeah.
I could see that. He's tiny.
So tiny.
A short king.
Jenny, did you hear the Christian Kane Tracy Chapman cover?
Wait.
During our last Angel and Pod episode, at the very end,
we organically discovered
while recording the episode that Christian Kane has a Fast Car cover.
No.
Yeah. And what's it's like, it actually like? Pretty good.
Is pretty good.
We were also really high, but it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, usually one for, like, a white straight dude covering a Tracy Chapman song, but it was kind of a bop.
Yeah.
So it was at bop tempo?
No. He's a country, like, singer. So it was a country.
He had a little twang.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, sit with that and we will play it for you later.
Thank you.
So Lindsay brings Darla back to Wolfram and Hart, which I'm sure was not a fun experience for Darla. But Holland enters, and something that is a motif in this episode is people telling Darla that she's not a prisoner when they actually are either doing things or saying things that are actually kind of holding her captive, whether it's, like, physically or emotionally. And Holland really rubs me the wrong way.
Mm. Yeah, he's really got something.
But he tries to gaslight Darla in this way by saying that God works in mysterious ways. He hands her, like, this big file folder about her first few days being alive, and we find out later that she has this syphilic heart condition that is slowly killing her. And that's when he says, yeah, you know, it's crazy, like, that you came back this way. And Darla's like, no, you brought me back. Like, leave Big G out of this. You did this to me.
Big
and they just they refuse to really take responsibility for the fact that they brought someone back just for her to die, essentially.
And that's an interesting echo of the scene that we saw where Darla was turned, where the master, where, like, God is brought up, and it's basically like, God's never done anything for me.
Yeah, like, totally.
So kind of a continuation of that. And it was funny to me that Holland was even pretending that there was some sort of morality within Wolfram and Hart, or, like,
totally. I think the only reason that Darla even somewhat trusts Wolfram and Hart is obviously because of Lindsay. And I think we as the audience kind of waffle back and forth whether or not Lindsay is trustworthy or not, and what his intentions are. And obviously by the end, we feel a little different about him.
Yeah. Also, like, not just morality, that Holland's trying to create this sense of within the company, but also like acknowledging that like the universe has its own path and plot, when in reality all Wolfram and Hart does is like try to control every circumstance totally. That they come across.
Yeah, they're like cheating the natural course of what something ends up being.
Yes.
By creating their own course.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you've just been in a car accident with someone where it's clearly the other person's fault, and the other person's like, well, you know, accidents happen. It's no one's fault. But now that we're here, we should just equally acknowledge that it's no one's fault. Like, it's basically like an insurance company trying to gaslight you into no one being responsible for anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then Gunn and Angel get to Darla's hotel room, which she is no longer at. And Gunn points out that maybe she was expecting Angel because she had a little cross necklace sitting on the little boudoir.
Or maybe she just likes to wear cross necklaces.
But Gunn remarks that this hotel room is very far off from where she lived before. So it's clear that they know Wolfram and Hart isn't bankrolling where she lives. But it's also funny knowing that Angelus and Angel have both pointed out how expensive Darla's taste is.
Mm.
So this is really like, if we're just looking at financially, this is like a big fall from grace for her that she is now in this environment that to her, that she used to like obviously look down upon, that now she's kind of at like the lowest point. And then obviously when we see her at the dive bar in a little bit and she is kind of like scraping at the bottom of the barrel for how she can turn again. It's just so clear how desperate she is throughout this episode. And she used to be like the most powerful vampire.
Well, I'm sure she will be again.
Spoiler alert.
I'm sorry. People aren't listening to this and watching the episode at the same time, are they?
I think what you mean is we'll see her again in the past, the flashback to 1765 in France, where she and Angelus are basically having, like, they're kind of bickering, sort of like a couple about choosing a restaurant. They're running from some sort of, not a slayer, but some sort of...
Holtz, a vampire hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, it was really hard to focus on the details of this scene because his accent is back.
Did you notice that even when he is Angel in the present, he says Darla? He like says Darla in his kind of
lilt.
Yeah, Darla. He doesn't say Darla. He says Darla.
I heard you say it the first time, Brittany.
Darla. Can we get a jingle that's just me saying Darla? And it could be like Darla.
Yes, that seems reasonable.
I can actually make it.
Yeah, it sounds like you just did.
But this is also making Darla a little horned up. She lays in some hay and she's like,
oh yeah.
Darla's outfit.
Did you guys notice Darla's outfit? I guess it's just pretty much in line with whatever she's wearing in the 1700s all the time.
Yeah.
Carry on. Her
in a corset is old hat by now.
Angel's accent, David Boreanaz' accent work seems to be getting worse as we go forward in time.
But they're about to have sex.
Hell yeah.
And that hay, like some animals. And then a flaming arrow comes through. Ugh, hate when that happens.
Me too.
And then we cut to the present where this was honestly my favorite scene of the episode.
So good.
Where Darla is at this bar that is like totally my type of bar. It's just garbage. And they're probably drinking Miller High Lifes. Mm-hmm. And there's like just vaguely some rock song on. And her makeup looks like something that I would have done in eighth grade when I was like trying to be hot. And she's on a date with this like alt rock vampire who is a huge dork. He like so much of the humor of the scene is that he is kind of like fetishizing and romanticizing his own vampire identity and being like, yeah, like a creature of the night like myself, not realizing that one of the most powerful vampires who have ever existed, who is also pretty like humble about being a vampire, I imagine, is sitting across from him. And he just believes that she's just like some human who is just going to gawk over the fact that he is a vampire.
I wonder why she didn't. I wonder why she didn't just be honest with him. Why she wouldn't take the approach of like, listen, does she think that he wouldn't believe her?
Too much work. It's like telling a Lyft or Uber driver that you're a writer. It's just, I'd rather just say I work at a bank and move on.
That happened to me yesterday, and within 5 minutes, he asked if I'd read his screenplay.
Yeah. You can't tell them anything about yourself.
She is very much like trying to outwit him into turning her, but he thinks that like she's just being a little freak. He's like, oh my God, a little weird. Also, this sounds like commitment.
Yeah. I love my avoidant king. And he's also only been a vampire for like 9 years. And so she's also kind of like, ew, you're like a child.
Yeah.
I also love how when he's like, oh, that sounds kind of weird, she's like, weird? It's mythic. Yeah. Which like totally sails right past him. Like he has no context.
No, not at all.
I do like how upfront he is about his boundaries.
When they go out to the alley, when she convinces him, like, we don't have to go. Like, you can literally just turn me. And he's like, how do you know that I'm not just going to, like, discard you? Like, at this point, I don't think she cares at all. She just has to try. He shows his inexperience in doing any of this because he perceives her as human, obviously. And she has to teach him how it works for, like, how to be turned. Which then obviously we also see at the very end of the episode, which, oh boy.
But of course, Angel's there to kill this dummy. Is very like, I was saving you from yourself, Darla. And she's like, bitch, I knew what I was doing. I was in control of this. I mean, she didn't love that the guy had no experience turning someone before, but she was going to make it work. And this was one of many scenes that Darla and Angel have, I would say, in across maybe 4 different episodes of this season that I like to call the marriage story scenes. Even though I've not seen that film, I get the sense like they just have a lot of sort of like hashing it out. Like, why don't you say what you really mean type conversations.
Yeah, and they're like, no, our kid deserves to live in New York. That's where his school is. That's where his friends are. It's like, no, he likes living in L.A., Yeah, I saw Marriage Story.
Congratulations.
But one of my favorite moments is the low-key burn that Darla does where she was like, I always pick the stupid ones. You should know that. So she's calling Liam, like stupid because she obviously targeted the person that she was going to turn as someone who was a dum-dum.
Oh, I missed that.
Cokes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. She shaped him and molded him.
Her desperation in this scene is also just so, it's so human. It's very beautiful in that way. I love the part where she's like, I wanted it to be you. Like if I had my pick of who could turn me, it would be you. But obviously you're not doing that. So now I have to go seek out these little like scuzz balls to do this. Rather than finding anything in between. It's like either you or
the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a version of when, again, like when it is this on again, off again, X type relationship. And the one party, like say Angel in this case, is like, we can't be together, but still has attachment. And then the other one goes and like fucks someone else. And he's like, oh, why would you like fuck that guy? And she's like, you don't get to have a say anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a lot of those dynamics going on. And then she shares with him that she's dying.
Yeah, and she's like, yeah, there's this like big file folder that I have that reveals that I'm dying. Do you want to read those files? And he refuses to
believe it.
Yeah, he refuses to believe it.
We all already know this before he says it, but I feel like it means something more when he says it to her while they're having this conversation about her getting turned or not, that he says, like, if you become a vampire, I'm going to have to kill you. Like,
yeah.
There is a tremendous weight there. And like, maybe it's a weight like she isn't even aware of.
Yeah. Well, he also doesn't want to have to kill her again because he killed her the last time.
Mm-hmm.
And we obviously are aware that if she gets turned, she wouldn't like have a soul automatically. She wouldn't be Angel.
Right.
Which is also what Angel uses against Lindsay in that later scene where he's like, what do you think that she's just going to like be your girlfriend? You fucking idiot.
Oh,
no,
Lindsay.
She's probably going to like seek you out and kill you.
For funsies.
Yeah. Because as we know, I mean, at least what we knew from Angelus, he would find pleasure in people who he had loved at some point, like love and hate,
hurting them.
Yeah, like love and hate were like very closely related, or like love and or obsession and, you know, hate. You get it. But yeah, back in France, Darla and Angelus are now in a burning barn, and Darla's like,
love this move.
Peace, bitch.
And Sienna in Vienna, or maybe not.
Yeah.
Hope you don't die.
I was curious about, like, what the purpose of this scene was, I suppose.
Same, narratively.
Oh, to me, I just thought it was like a Darla's out for number one, even if it means sacrificing her, like, unlife partner.
So just juxtaposing Darla in her heyday with Angel now. Like the sacrifice that he's willing to make for her that she never was even capable of making for him.
Yeah.
Or like who she is as a human now versus who she was as a vampire or something.
Something. Just she's out there riding the waves of extremity and self-interest.
But it is interesting that we only see this, like that we see this flashback now, when there was like other episodes that I thought painted the full picture of what their arc looked like. And now like there's this other moment where they were separated for a while because of Darla, and Angelus just had to like get over that and they had to re-find each other. I don't know. It felt slightly unnecessary to me, or it just created confusion in my timeline of what their relationship was like in these 150 years.
I think what we're supposed to get from this, aside from that she's just like ruthlessly self-interested, they also like he survived, obviously, and then they reconnected and continued their like dark, strange, romantic obsession with each other.
Right.
In spite of, like, they probably had a laugh about it.
Yeah. But Angel brings Darla back to Angel Investigations. And Cordelia and Wesley are rightfully concerned. And there's a great exchange where Cordy's like, so you're planning on sleeping over? And Darla's like, I'm dying. And Cordelia's like, so just for the one night then? And Charisma Carpenter can deliver a line like that, like none other. Cordelia, like, out of touch with the severity of the situation and only looking out for her safety is so fun.
But also, I think she genuinely doesn't care if Darla's dying. She's probably like, sweet.
Yeah, I mean, and they also had met before, like, in The Harvest.
In
season one of Buffy.
Way back when.
Yeah. So she's on top of the fact that Darla plays a huge role in this whole Angel fiasco and her boss just being completely unfocused and a little unhinged, she also has personal experience with how Darla has kind of ruined her life. But Angel does not believe this file folder labeled medical files.
Mm-hmm. How could he not believe it? It says clearly medical files.
And Darla does believe it. And so Angel wants to prove that Wolfram and Hart is lying. And he asked Cordelia and Wesley to watch Darla, and like Angel's not even out of earshot yet. And Cordelia and Wesley are like, okay, so you're our prisoner.
And we hate you.
Yeah, and we will kill you if you do anything. And you can just see how there's such little fight left in Darla that she's just like, yeah, I'm just going to go like smell the jasmine in the courtyard. I don't have time for this.
And then Angel busts into Lindsay's, and there's, like, this funny beat of, like, I know I can't come in, but Lindsay's like, wipe your shoes. Step across the threshold, and Angel's like, what? and then hesitates, but then is still like, I'm still going to beat the shit out of him.
Right.
But, yeah, this is the scene where Angel's going to realize, you're not the only one who loves Darla. Lindsay, it does seem here, invested in figuring out a way to help her. But he does make a biting comment to Angel about, like, I would save her if I could, and you can and you won't. Implying, basically, that if he were a vampire, he would turn her.
If I was an ensouled vampire who had 250 years of suffering, I would totally be able to just turn on a dime and turn this evil vampire. Like, it just,
they just have like very different definitions of save.
Yeah, and he can't possibly know what it would mean to Angel to turn Darla.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even know what it would mean to turn Darla in the first place, I don't think. Because he, like as I was saying, I don't think he realizes that she will then be evil, and whatever type of, you know, sexual tension that they had or any type of romance that they had would likely be completely gone because he's a human and she would not care for him.
Yeah.
But there is this like really wild moment where Angel has him by the throat and Lindsay's like, does it really look like you need to throttle me for information? And it's like, come on, Angel writers, what are you doing? That's a little bye for Boreanaz.
He's got a broody stare and hot spiky hair. If you're straight or gay, your tingly feelings don't care. You're just being honest about this sexy demonic in your bye for Boreanaz.
Yeah, but for anyone who wasn't aware, Darla had, you know, obviously we saw Darla dying of syphilis in the past, and that's when the master turned her. And this is basically like it like rolled over into her new human life. So now her syphilis had gone so untreated for so long, I guess just in the ether of like 400 something years, that now it has created a syphilitic heart condition. And if that's not a PSA to get tested, I really don't know what is.
Uh-huh. Angel, year 2000, doing the good work.
Yeah. Angel also calls Lindsay a schoolboy, which I think is a really interesting parallel between, because we just watched the Angel episode of Buffy from season one of Buffy. And that's when Darla literally comes back as like a schoolgirl.
Oh, right.
And so now he's calling Lindsay a schoolboy, which I thought was kind of funny.
What this scene does is confirm for Angel that she is indeed dying. It's not fake news. It's
real.
Yeah,
he's got recs from a bunch of different doctors.
And this is also the era, I feel like 2000 was peak era of people being like, don't believe what you read on the internet. You know what I mean? So the fact that it's physical files that were not internet.
Yeah, someone printed these out.
And yeah, they were printed out. And
they were signed, and they were put in this folder.
And Lindsay, too, is sad about this, is like enough for him. And now he is gutted and he has to go home and tell Darla. Like, it's true. The rumors are true.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Linsky.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Dude, jasmine, it blooms at night. I remember what that was like.
Like,
the
you?
Drama! Lady.
Listen, Jenny, you don't know what it would feel like to
You're
find
right.
out you have a ticking clock of a syphilis endgame and
sure,
after
sure.
hundreds of years.
Sure,
but
yes.
I also wanted to point out, before Angel tells Darla that it is true, Cordelia and Wesley are kind of going back and forth. Well, it's mainly just Cordelia talking, but she's telling Wes how the fact that Darla has lived for 400 years as a vampire and caused so much death and destruction, why does she deserve to live? Which is obviously the point that's being made through the trial, and when that, like, butler dude is asking Angel, like, did she kind of already had her chance? Like, I don't, why does this person deserve to live? And Cordelia is questioning that. She says in this very specific cult pop culture reference way.
Survivor reference.
Yeah, she says you get voted off the island. And Survivor started just the previous year.
Oh,
wow. Out there on the cutting edge.
I went on a date with someone who was on, I went on a date, a couple dates with this guy who was on Survivor back when I was in college.
My friend was on Survivor. She came in second place and
Holy
was
shit.
On All Stars.
Oh my God.
Shout out to Aubrey Bracco. We were on field hockey together in high school.
Wow. There's also 40 seasons of Survivor now. So it's like statistically, we all know someone who is on Survivor, right?
I don't.
I would say we're probably all 1 degree away from someone on Survivor.
Yeah.
You're one, Jenny, you're 1 degree
no,
away
one
from
degree.
Two people.
Yes. And congratulations to us all.
Yeah. Also, how truly cutting edge that the writers like knew after 1 year, this is going to be a hit. This is going to hold up.
It's
like,
probably the longest running reality series, right?
Right. But I'm talking about at the time when
totally,
they wrote
yeah.
this in. Like, how many pop culture references and shows do you think there are where the like thing they refer to just ended up not having staying power at all? So it's completely, therefore, when you watch, it's completely lost on you.
Right. I need to stop writing, "You are the weakest link, goodbye," into my scripts. It's just no longer culturally relevant.
I mean, I had a visceral reaction to that. So it depends on your demo.
True. Yeah.
He's like, "Oh, man, boo, you're dying. There's only one thing left to do. Let's go sing some karaoke."
So, fun fact, which is that Julie Benz suffers horrible stage fright.
Aww.
So, doing this singing scene was a nightmare for her.
She looks stressed out.
Yes.
But she looks like she's having a bad time.
It works with the character, though.
She's so still. She's, like, almost not moving her face at all.
Yeah. But I will say, Julie Benz is one of those people where their natural speaking voice seems like it naturally lends itself to, like, a gorgeous singing voice.
Yeah, all you have to do is just, like, tune it
yeah,
to
all,
shit.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, it kind of reminds me of, like Mandy Moore.
Or Jewel.
Or Jewel,
oh,
yeah. And this is just what I sound like when I talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who will save your soul? Get it?
Oh,
oh wow.
I like that.
Mm. Wow.
Is Jewel Darla?
Is Darla Jewel?
Mm. Think about it. And Lauren is like, "Oh, I don't know if we're going to save this bird."
Yeah. I love how much he does not care about the severity of this and is just speaking in his, like, weird fucking language and being like, "Yeah, I don't know if this kitty cat's going to make it." And Angel is like, "Dude."
But if she is going to make it, what it's going to require is that you jump into an empty pool.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Why head first?
It feels like a continuation of what becomes thematic with the whole challenge of, like, you have to be willing to take the ultimate risk and give the ultimate sacrifice.
It's both literal and metaphorical to take the plunge. Lorne does, in his kind of vague way, say, okay, there is a way. I don't like it at all. It's a quest. It will probably kill you. And Angel's like, yeah, yeah, sure, whatever. Like, he thinks he's just being hyperbolic, but that's actually the case. And Lorne is now the second person to bring up. She had 400 years to be alive, essentially, as a vampire. That's more than what anyone else gets. Why do you feel like she deserves more time? And that's kind of like, it gets asked a couple times throughout this episode. But Lorne, for how in tune he is to the world and what's naturally supposed to happen, it's like very clear that this is not something that Angel should really be doing. Like, it's kind of like, why are you doing this?
Lorne being prescient, like, shouldn't he have the sight to know that what Angel's about to do won't actually work for Darla?
Well, I think that where Lorne's kind of, like, foresight ends is when someone does something super out of character. It kind of, like, bends what the natural course was supposed to be. And because Angel is going so off course from what his, you know, what, like, his
destiny,
path is,
yeah,
he's like kind of fucking up what it all is supposed to be. And Lorne can't even possibly predict what can happen now because Angel is so far off his path.
That Angel going so hard trying to save someone who was, like, deeply important to him for hundreds of years is out of character.
I think because of what the end result will be, like him sacrificing himself,
yeah.
How will that help what his mission is?
I mean, even the butler, I think is what he was called, is, I think, saying to him, like, the world's, real quick check in before you make this ultimate decision, like, the world is objectively better with you in it.
Yeah.
And also, you don't know what's going to happen if you do save her. She's pretty fucked
up.
She
can't save herself.
Yeah.
How's she going to save another person? Like, she's not a replacement for you.
It's everyone is telling Angel about his codependent relationship, and he's just being like, I don't care.
Yeah,
I'm
it's
doing
working
it
out
anyway.
Of a place of desperation to just, like, continue what is happening, which I think happens in bad relationships sometimes, where you're, like, almost about to break up, but then, like, the little sliver happens where you're like, or we could just stay together and just, like, not talk about this for another 3 months. But this, or just the general vibe of, why are you choosing to potentially die for this person who can't really do anything? It reminded me of I Will Remember You, where Angel had the opportunity to live as a human and be with Buffy, but then he waited against what the world would be losing, which is him as, like, this warrior. And he decided to give up the thing he wanted most in this world to continue to fight this fight.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt like it felt super out of character. Basically, it's like, how do we weigh him being with Buffy versus Darla just being alive?
Well, I felt like
it's a comparable choice in that way.
I thought the main impetus for him ultimately deciding to give up being with Buffy was because the powers also suggested, in no uncertain terms, that Buffy would die sooner. But
from, like, this big threat of an army or whatever. Yeah.
But also there was that episode very early on in season one of Angel where he chose not to take the ring for that same reason. Because he's like, I need to be in the darkness because that's where people need me to protect them.
Yeah.
Yeah, like not thinking about the greater good anymore.
Yeah. He's acting very impulsively just to keep this person alive.
But at the same time, I feel like his emotional journey here is extremely human because what he's really grappling with is mortality and grappling with, like, wait, this isn't fair that this person doesn't have enough time to actually grow into, like, their potential.
Right. Yeah. So then Angel does take a little dive off that board. And can we just say, good form?
We can.
And yeah, this British guy who I've been calling the butler, but I believe on IMDb he's called the valet, which is interesting.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, valet is like it's like similar to a butler.
Oh.
Like that's another, like, not the driver, like when Richard and Emily Gilmore briefly separate, spoilers for Gilmore Girls, Richard has a valet instead of a butler who basically does everything that a butler does, but also like cooks for him. That seemed like beyond the duties of a butler, maybe.
So are we meant to believe that there is someone higher up than the butler?
He definitely seems like he's the agent of, like, the totally neutral agent of some greater force.
Super neutral. I kind of liked that about it.
I did too. Yeah. I hate to like keep talking about things in like dysfunctional interpersonal therapeutic terms, but it was
not this again.
But he seemed almost like the polar opposite in terms of having boundaries. He had the most boundaries. He was literally just like,
oh,
yeah,
I don't care.
Like,
yeah.
I'm not going to get emotionally invested in this because, like, this is a you thing, bro. Like, yeah, I'm just here doing a job. But, like, best of luck.
And so for also in the third trial, for him to question why Angel is doing this, it's like, clearly this is some shit he's never seen before. And he's like, just out of my own curiosity, not that I care. But why do you want this chick to live when you have so much more to give to the world? Again, just saying, as like a very unbiased third party.
Since he is so neutral, like, do you think that that was just like him asking that question was just like one more thing to try to get Angel to fail?
Potentially, yeah. Yeah, I guess so, because nobody else had gotten past that point. So maybe it was also part of the trial for him to.
But he was also right.
Yeah, he was right. He was, that is the thing.
True.
There was a caveat to the trial that Lorne.
Angel's got to take his shirt off.
Yeah. So that he has to do it shirtless. Is that Darla is Angel's collateral. So if Angel fails, Darla dies instantly. And that is something that Angel was not aware of, which I also think should have been talked about, like, before he dove into the pool. Like, he didn't really know that that's what he was getting into. But the first trial has already begun. And we hear this beast off screen. Who's this beast?
This scene had a little bit of, like, the Ring vibes. The Ring episode.
Oh, yes. Completely.
These trials didn't seem that hard. I'm
also
sorry.
Like, didn't the second one seem way easier
than the first one?
I think that should have been the first one.
I agree.
Because then he'd be all like bruised up too when he had to like fight this dude with who had like really cool hair. He had shaved sides and then like a French braid into pigtails that were braided.
Brittany is very sensitive to demon hair.
I love what they do to demon hair.
Did you ever play Mortal Kombat?
Sure.
Yes.
You remember the, not like the ultimate boss, but like the next down. He has like six arms, I think, and he's huge and green and has like a top knot ponytail.
Yes.
This guy.
Yes.
Maybe it's this guy.
Yeah. This is his two-armed brother.
Yeah.
But the sneaky thing about this guy is you can't just slice and dice him. He'll just, like, collect himself back up and put himself back together, a la in Buffy.
Oh, sure,
oh,
the
yeah,
judge.
Yeah, the judge. Yeah.
Of course. He's got a judge-like quality.
But he's where the judge did not have, like, chainmail jeggings.
Unfortunately.
But meanwhile, Darla is in the dining room that has a bevy of beautiful breads set out, which, by the way.
Bevy of beautiful breads.
I made a loaf of bread last weekend. No big deal.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And Darla wants to see what's going on. And so the butler just like taps her forehead and she can kind of see Angel getting his ass beat, essentially.
Are we led to believe, especially by what she says later, that she can also feel everything that Angel is feeling? Because she says later, like, oh, I could feel how you care for me. And I like feel like everything you've been through now that I was like.
Yeah,
I thought that was just her tapping deeper into her having a soul. Like, I think that, like, she's never, this is her first time really experiencing what feelings are. And there was something about seeing him push himself to this extreme of, like, breaking down that seemed to, like, break through for her somehow.
Mm-hmm,
maybe.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought
about. Yeah.
But we're on to trial two, bitches. And as we said, this trial seemed super easy, which makes this fun fact kind of sad because it goes by so quickly. But production designer Stuart Blatt says that the long hallway we built with the crosses emblazoned on the floor and embedded on the walls was one of my favorite sets we'd ever done.
Stuart Blatt.
I know, and it sucks because we were maybe on that set for maybe like 30 seconds.
And we're tops. Like, that scene sucked.
Yeah.
What a waste. It is very like Indiana Jones, though. Like, I wonder if that's intentional at all.
And yeah. I felt like what it could have used, like after that scene where the valet is essentially like, he is remarkable. And Darla's like, he is. The scene could have been helped with even a line after that scene being like, you know, something conveying that the level of masochism that it took for Angel to get through that. Like, obviously, he got through it just by like grinning and bearing through the pain.
Yeah.
But like, I think we're meant to understand that he has such a high tolerance for suffering because he's such like a masochist.
Right. Right.
That he was willing to just go move through pain instead of try to avoid it.
Yeah.
And the third trial.
These sexy chains come out of nowhere. Do they sell these on Amazon?
Probably. Yeah, sure.
The ones that just go.
I think you have to enchant the ones from Amazon to get them to do that.
I think so as well. The final challenge is just a wall of steaks. And I think it would have been funnier if they revealed a wall of hot sauces.
What?
I don't know. I feel like that would have been harder. They're like, you have to chug
all these hot sauce.
I worked at a place in Chicago where one of the main attractions was there was a huge wall of hot sauces that you could choose from. It was a New Orleans style place.
I'd be very into that.
Yeah, but I feel like it would be scarier to the audience if it was a wall of hot sauces.
Did you guys notice how after, like, when this wall is activated and all the stakes go flying, they all kind of, like, go willy-nilly? It's not like they're shooting, like, really straight and yeah. true. Like, would he even have died if it wasn't...
Right. Like, they could have collided with each other.
Yeah.
Because like, it has to just... It only can hit, you know, one little portion.
Yeah.
It has
yeah.
to hit his heart. If it hit anywhere else, it wouldn't kill him.
It's true.
So well, it's like, wouldn't it make more sense if it was like a giant stake aimed at his heart?
Or like that wall just moved forward.
That's
slowly.
What I thought it was going to be.
Like
yeah.
Star Wars style, where they get crushed in the.
Oh, yes.
To get crushed in the gap,
trash
the
compactor?
Trash chute. Yeah. I would like to suggest that maybe the stakes do that because they were never intended to kill anyone. Because
right.
think of all the scenarios. There's no scenario where someone's killed by the stakes.
Right,
because if you say, yes, kill me,
you don't
live.
Die. Right, right, right.
If you
right.
say, no, I'm not going to die, the other person dies.
Well, it just sucks now that they have to, like, clean up all those stakes just for
and, like,
for
put
show.
Them all back in the wall one by
yeah.
one.
Kind of sucks. Yeah. Do you think it's time for a little fuckwatch?
I'm ready. Are you ready, Jenny?
I was born ready.
Do we have your verbal consent?
You do.
I think our guests should go first.
Darla.
Okay, as you know as a listener, we're going to need a little more than just the name. We're going to need what aspect of Darla you maybe have seen.
Why
maybe
the state of Darla?
Well, love to see Darla with a soul.
Aww.
Love Darla's like... growth and blooming over the course of this episode specifically. Love her raspy little voice. Yeah, and I, you know, when will I get to pick Darla again? No idea. Gotta get it while it's hot. Honestly, close second, valet seems like, mystical butler seems like a nice, neutral partner you could really, like, work with and grow.
Don't you feel like whenever you'd express your feelings to him, he'd be like, yeah, honestly, I don't feel that either way. Like, you're like, yeah, but I love you. He's like, cool, cool, cool. I hear you. But like, I could go either way, honestly.
But how much? But now I'm going to show my cards of who I picked. But doesn't that really inspire a lot of self-reflection if someone isn't reacting emotionally?
Couple of valet stands over here.
Yeah. So I did choose. The butler, but it would be for purely a non-emotional experience because I think I'm too emotional to be with someone who has like absolutely no emotion. But I feel like since he has no preference, either way about things. It's like, yeah, there's something very appealing about like a non-emotional, neutral experience where he could like tap my little forehead, place me in different worlds, get me to feel different things. He'd leave like a dining room table for me afterwards so I could just like carb load.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's still, you know, he's still a good host. He's still like providing, he's fulfilling a need for his guests.
And yeah, and there's people that work in, you know, obviously anyone who works in the service industry, I think, knows how to like please people. Mm. And if I never, you know, called again, he wouldn't be bothered either way. It would just be a, that's me doing that move.
All right, well, I am going to close this circle tidily by saying I, too, am going with Darla.
Mm. Nice.
This is, I'm finally using that pick. I was waiting for the right moment, and now that I see the direction that we're going with Darla, I am choosing Darla in her, like, enlightenment mode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Darla in the final scene before Drusilla comes in. She is... for the first and question mark only time, really understanding the sacrifice that Angel has made for her and really understanding the depth of his love for her in a way that she literally has never been able to do before. Like she is seeing him clearly for the first time ever. And I think that's really powerful. It's almost like I'm choosing this version of Darla for the opposite reason that you chose the valet, Brittany, because it's sort of like I want someone who's like, so in it for and also every moment like is embracing every moment and experience because she's so tapped into her own mortality. So like the sex would be incredible,
right? It's like I'm about to die sex.
Yeah.
Whoa.
We would just be holding each other and it'd be
I'm too like busy for that right now. I just need a really neutral kind of like get the job done.
That's experience. Totally fair. Totally fair. Have you chosen Darla yet this season?
I haven't.
Wow. Do you have a specific time in mind or are you just waiting for it to feel right?
I'm waiting for it to feel right.
Cool. I respect that.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Flirting, understanding, consent, and kissing. Flirting, understanding, consent, and kissing. Watch. So Angel passed the test, which is that he was ready to accept death. And he comes back fully clothed.
Unfortunate.
Nice.
Right. But also it's like, how did those clothes get back on that body?
Little neutral cherubim.
Whoa. See, that's maybe another reason to pick him is that you could just he could just like snap his little fingers and I'd be like fully clothed again.
Again.
Very efficient. You're really going for efficiency with this.
Yeah, my time is very precious. And so that's just another point in his favor. But then the butler's like, all right, time to give you your reward. Oh no, she's broken. Yeah, I can't do this. Which is something that he maybe should have like tested out before Angel went through this whole thing. It's going to be a very negative Yelp review if I've ever seen one.
Having someone fill out a waiver, sign a waiver, having someone test out if this is even going to work for them beforehand kind of takes away from like the momentum of the you must be willing to sacrifice at all cost energy of the whole experiment.
Yeah. Way too much space for second thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Angel is pissed. He throws down these vases that did nothing to him. He
did what Mike Wu did in college when I beat him at beer pong. Just punches the wall for a while.
Yeah. Seriously? This concrete beam is going to get all my anger.
Was there like a monetary bet or was his pride?
Pretty sure it was just being beat by a lady friend in front of a bunch of his bros.
You know that beer pong is a game where you just bounce a ping pong ball into beer glasses?
Oh, that's not what we were doing. Oh, she liked that one.
It just doesn't seem like a very masculine or non-masculine thing. Like, it seems like a weird thing to pick to be emasculated by, but I guess
it's being defeated.
Defeated by a
in
woman
competition.
In any format, sure. Okay. Oh, the shame.
The patriarchy!
He broke the window of the common room.
What a dip.
Mm. So, yeah, he's very upset here, but there's something about this expression of childlike rage that really does it for Darla. Something opens in her, and she slowly walks toward him as if seeing him in a new light.
There's the big, dumb, hulking animal I fell in love with all those centuries ago.
Ah, Liam, there you are again.
Hell yeah.
In some ways, you'd think he would be a little relieved that there are really no more avenues to go.
Yeah, he really made it through a high stakes situation. Sorry, I just couldn't let that pun go.
Get out.
Stay forever.
Angel is just so clouded because Darla dying would really be the best thing for his mission overall, because then Wolfram and Hart wouldn't have this person to wave over him. He also wouldn't be distracted anymore, but he is just actively kind of fighting against his own mission that was so clear to him at the very beginning of this season. And it's just wild to watch someone make bad choices, as it always is.
This has brought Angel all the way down to a rock bottom where now he is willing to bite Darla.
Yeah, maybe I have a soul, so maybe if I turn you, like, you'll have a soul or you won't be so evil or something.
I don't think that's how it works, buddy.
I don't think so.
And she in the inverse way has decided she no longer wants that, because mm-hmm. now she has fully understood what love is. And she's fully understood how deeply he loves her and doesn't want to go back to not knowing that. Like, the thing that he was hoping for her and being human mm-hmm. has happened.
Yeah, it, like, on an accelerated path, it happened.
Yeah, and he's like, perfect. I'm literally not going to leave your side. You will never be alone again.
Yeah,
and they hold each other.
I will be holding you until you die.
Unless a SWAT team of evil lawyers come in and tase me. No promises if that happens.
Have we seen a vampire get tased before?
We saw him get tased in The Ring, I believe.
Or they had some kind of, like, electric
Yeah, I don't
thing.
Think that they're immune to, like, getting shocked through the system. Lindsay's so evil in this.
Yeah, it actually made me wonder, like, for a second, wait, was Darla in on this?
No,
it,
God, no.
Okay, she wasn't, right? Because no. I felt like Lindsay was like, how'd you think this was going to end? Like, as if it was a setup.
It was a setup, I think, for Angel and Darla. Like, I think that Lindsay was like, there was never going to be a world in which I didn't turn Darla into a vampire again to be evil.
Or is it like, because Angel's plan didn't work and he didn't find a way to save Darla as a human, then Lindsay is like,
but does Lindsay know that?
No, I don't think Lindsay would be
aware. I don't
know, I
feel like they have ways of getting info.
Like, he called up the valet and was like, yo, you owe me one. And the valet is like, oh,
you think the valet doesn't have a Wolfram and Hart account?
He's like, I don't care one way or the other what you do with this information.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, question. What is the main reason that Lindsay wants Darla alive and a vampire? Is it his love? Is it to get... Is it professional, personal, or a beautiful cocktail?
But I think it's primarily personal.
Yeah.
Oh, I think because he's operating also through Wolfram and Hart, I think that it's either split evenly or it's potentially more about the fact that they're going to have a really powerful vampire on their side to take out Angel.
Why do they think she's going to be on their side?
I think because they don't actually... Similar to,
have,
like,
they ever met a vampire?
Well, I mean, technically, Drusilla, like, worked with them peacefully.
We'll see.
You know? So, like...
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah.
For now.
Because the reason that they brought her back has already succeeded so much, but now, like, for the final blow, it's her being a vampire and then being able to, like, use that power that she has as this all-powerful, evil fucking vampire to destroy Angel and anyone who gets in their way.
But it's interesting because this choice, in some ways, you could argue, is Lindsay making the same sort of choice that kind of goes ultimately against his own self-interest in the way that Angel was trying to do when he was almost staked to death. Like, in the sense that this might come back to bite him.
Literally. I honestly don't know if he understands that.
But the fact that he's even willing to chance that feels sure. like he's off his path.
Yeah.
You know, like mm-hmm. the culture at Wolfram and Hart is becoming more and more chaotic, where they're like truly dipping into things that they have less kind of checks and balances in place to like make sure that they'll stay in control over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think they have a human resources department. But guess who walks through that door, honey?
Oh, it is Drusilla.
Drusilla, you fill my heart with dread, and still I'm led right back to you.
Drusilla, who is now working with Wolfram and Hart, who's also probably so delighted to do this to reap vengeance upon her grandmother.
I think that's the motive. I don't think she gives a shit about Wolfram and Hart.
Yeah, she might be getting some money from it. But now
she's just lonely. Yeah, maybe. She probably just misses the squad.
Yeah, and she's trying to bring back that squad goal.
Get the gang back together.
Because I think we talked about before the different ways in which the four of them were turned and how violent the way that Drusilla was turned was. It's like it's almost that experience mirrored, where Darla is a human who does not want to be turned the same way Drusilla was a human that didn't want to be turned, and now Drusilla's doing it to Darla.
The ultimate Ooh. Revenge. Poetic.
And then Justice. Angel has to watch.
And then
it's fucking brilliant. Good face acting, by the way.
Drusilla fully makes eye contact with him when she like wipes the blood on her neck,
yeah,
and then
like, remember that
forces Darla to drink.
Yeah, remember that like weird sexual thing you guys did to me? I'm about to do it to you.
Ooh.
Yeah, and then Drusilla pushing Darla towards her like bosom with blood on it was like
her décolletage.
It was a whole thing, whole feeling that I wasn't ready to interrogate. It was just like a.
That was one of those scenes that was like almost too on the nose to like bring up in Fuckwatch, that I was like
100%.
Like, yeah. Like it's one of those things where it's like, I'm not often, despite what it might feel like sometimes in the Fuckwatch, I'm not often like actually speaking with like my real desire.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's like layers that you feel comfortable getting into, and Drusilla turning Darla and the granddaughter becoming the mama, it was like, okay, noted.
Look into that on your own time.
Correct.
Yeah, Jenny, what did you think of that scene of watching Darla be turned kind of against her desire?
Well, it's like you can't ever watch these shows and be happy. Or you can't stay happy watching these shows.
No.
They give you one step forward and then they rip you back 2 to 4 steps. You like get to this place at the end and it's like, wow, Darla's like really come a long way. Maybe Angel and Darla can be friends and neither one of them will have to be so like lonely and isolated and miserable. But no.
Mm.
No. You can't have it. We don't get to have nice things.
Yeah. You don't get to smile.
No, there's only pain on
and
this
isn't
show.
Isn't that life sometimes?
It truly is.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
thank you so much for being here, Jenny.
Oh my God. Thank you for having me. What a delight.
Would you mind telling the people where they can find you if they do not already?
Sure. Okay, you can listen to more of my speaking voice on my podcast, Buffering the Vampire Slayer, and my other podcast, Veronica Mars Investigations. And you can hear my singing voice by going to my website, which is jennyowenyoungs.com. Jenny Owen Youngs on all socials. Cool. See you later.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Angel on Top. I'm Laura Zack, and you can find me on Instagram at Laura Zack or on Twitter at @la_wa.
And I'm Brittany Ashley, and you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brit27Ash with a 2 T's.
And you can follow Angel on Top on Instagram and Twitter as well at AngelOnTopCast. Feel free to email us at AngelOnTopPodcast, all one word, @gmail.com.
And now, please enjoy the poem for The Trial from Angel's Perspective.
The Trial. Ah, the smell of fresh linens. It sure remedied my depression. I don't even remember her name. What a silly, long-gone obsession. Cordelia's relieved. Wesley's pleased. To bid farewell to Darla Quandary. But now that guns found a lead, yes, I was lying. Fuck all this laundry. Darla's always liked a room with a view, but Skid Row Motel leaves much to be desired. The downgrades persist in the alley. Did you see the guy she wanted to sire her? She offered her neck to this lowlife guy. I'd kill to be human while she tries to die. Her desperation is palpable. She just won't stop trying. I simply can't understand it till Darla reveals she's dying. It's just a scheme crafted by Lindsay. I'd be playing right into their hand. But when I throttle him for the truth, she really didn't come back as planned. Lauren's got the fatal connection to health restorative trials. I'm introduced to the agenda by some guy who sounds like Giles. I'm dropped in dungeon battle. I'll be slain or get brutally hurt. After slicing my rival in halves, I'm not sure why I can't wear my shirt. A hall of crosses, holy water, all intent on burning vampiric skin. I face off with a wall of stakes, but told there's no way I can win. Accepting death, ignoring my mission, the valet must think I suffer from insanity. But for what's at stake, no pun intended, I want Darla to experience humanity. Trial completed, but no reward. I should have read the fine print. But my desire to keep her alive on Darla made quite the imprint. Mid-revelation comes violent reunion. Drew and evil lawyers strike up a deal. If being a human means living in fear, after 400 years, Darla now knows how that feels.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God. And we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.